Security at the New York University School of Law, the co-editor of the Torture Papers, The Road to Abu Ghraib, and the editor of the Torture Debate in America. She recently took a Pentagon-guided tour of Guantanamo and has written a very interesting piece for Tom Englehart at Tom Graham entitled Bush Policy Detained in Iran. What is really behind the detention of these Iranian Americans in Tehran currently? We're going to be discussing that with Karen Greenberg here after the first commercial break. Suffice it to say that I'm working on something for the American Free Press, and that is why Kenneth Timmerman of the Washington Times and Insight on the News and other neoconservatives of similar ilk are interested in this conference that took place last weekend in Paris, France, involving all kinds of Iranian expatriates across the political spectrum. What's really going on with all of this, folks? Who's behind what as it pertains to American policy with Iran? Quite clearly, I think we are moving in the direction of war. If you look at the whole issue of presidential national security directive 35 in support of Khan Plan 8022, at least as Dr. Michael Chasadovsky has outlined that for us at globalresearch.ca, and then look at some of the most recent statements being made by John Bolton and other neoconservatives on the whole subject of Iran, it becomes abundantly clear that the neocons and Mr. Bush have several things planned for that country. One is to continue to support dissident groups in Azerbaijan, Khuzestan province, and Balochistan province that want to sever their relationship with the central government in Tehran. It's quite clear, according to Philip Giraldi of the American Conservative, who's going to be on this show next week, that the American CIA and the British MI6 and the Israeli Mossad are all involved in black bag covert operations in those provinces. The other thing is to overtly threaten war with the Islamic Republic of Iran regime, supposedly in the interest of preventing nuclear proliferation, at the same time that what our leaders are proposing, at least tacitly, is the utilization of tactical nuclear weapons against that government and against that country and against the population centers of Iran. That's an extremely problematic policy. I've been contacted by several Iranian expatriates in this country who have known me for quite a number of years because, of course, I lived in Iran years ago when my parents were stationed there. And it's abundantly clear that across the political spectrum within the Iranian orbit, we're talking about people that at one time were a part of Mossadegh's old National Front organization. We're talking about some Marxists and ex-Marxists. We're talking about Persian monarchists who supported the Shah a generation ago. Across the spectrum, the honest ones are looking at this present American policy with Tehran, and they see the same fingerprints that I see in regard to what's likely to happen in the next year. This is absolutely terrifying, folks, and when we look at Bush administration policy in Iran, we're quite clearly looking at a government that is also threatening domestic liberties at home. And when we look at what Bush is doing, Bush and Cheney are doing in Iran, and what they're likely to do in conjunction with an acquiescent Congress, we are reminded that the same things that James Madison said to us in the 18th century are true today. And that is that a government that threatens other nations around the world in international policy, a policy based upon interventionism and militarism, is quite likely to be the same central government that is going to be threatening the domestic liberties of people in this country. And it seems to me that the American left and the populist American right are in absolute agreement on this. We'll be back with Karen Greenberg after the break. We'll discuss her article for Tom Graham entitled Bush Policy Detained in Iran. Mark Gantos America returns live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49. Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Available from the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Now you have the time to review every spoken word
on any RBN program
by ordering CDs of any broadcast in either standard audio or MP3 format. Audio CDs are just $10 per hour.
$15 for 2 hours.
And $7 when you order 3 or more hours. An entire month of your favorite broadcaster in MP3 format for just $20. So order right, Republic Broadcasting. 1015 South Main. Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. That address again is Republic Broadcasting, 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Or for more information, call 1-800-724-2719.
And on the web at rbnlive.com.
Order your CDs today because you can handle the truth.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Mark Antosh, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We are joined today by Karen Greenberg, who has written a very important article for Tom Englehart's Tom Graham. The title of that article is Bush Policy Detained in Iran. What is behind the current detentions of these Iranian Americans in Tehran, and what are the implications of it? I suggest that there are a number of implications connected to this story, particularly as we look at last weekend in Paris, France, and this Iranian expatriate conference, known as the Iran Solidarity Conference, took place in Paris at that time. A number of American neoconservatives, including Kenneth Timmerman of the Washington Times, are very interested in covering what happened in Paris last weekend. Why? I'm going to be exploring that one for the American Free Press in coming times. But suffice it to say that when we look at this whole issue of the detention of these individuals in Tehran, even at this very hour, we need to take a look at the piece authored by Karen Greenberg, and that piece is entitled Bush Policy Detained in Iran. You can find it with Tom Englehart's Tom Graham, which is a project of the Nation Institute. Karen Greenberg is the executive director of the Center on Law and Security at the New York University School of Law. She's the co-editor of the Torture Papers, The Road to Abu Ghraib, and the editor of The Torture Debate in America. Karen Greenberg recently took a Pentagon-guided tour of Guantanamo. Karen, how are you?
I'm good.
Good. Listen, in regard to the detentions of these individuals in Tehran, even as we speak, I noticed that the Iran Press Service, of course, which tends to have a lot of articles by American neoconservatives, has had an awful lot to say about these detentions. Quite clearly, these detentions in conjunctions with some things that have been happening on the American side of the aisle suggest that not all is well with American policy with Tehran. Where do you think this thing is headed?
Well, it doesn't look like it's headed in any good direction right now, but, you know, that can always be reversed, perhaps, by some kind of wise diplomacy. But I think that this sort of shadow game of detainees and abducting people on both sides of the border is part of a dangerous story.
Well, you know, the thing that I think a lot of times people fail to understand about this, and I think the neoconservative American press is a part of the problem, is that when we look at what Tehran is presently doing with these Iranian Americans, including Ms. Esfandiari, this is being portrayed in a particular way by much of American corporate media. And yet the other side of that coin is what we tend not to be told by American corporate media. And that is exactly what Philip Giraldi of the American Conservative has been reporting for months, and that is that the American CIA and the Israeli Mossad and the British MI6 have been conducting a series of covert operations within Iranian borders, and that may go a long way, it seems to me, toward explaining what Tehran is doing in response.
You know, it may be. This is one of those chicken and the egg issues. You know, how do you know what came first and what followed? But I think that whatever these people, these four Americans or five, if you want to include the FBI former FBI man,
Levinson, yes,
Levinson, whatever they were doing there, they still need to be treated within the codes of international law. And that is what the Bush administration is asking for, and that's a problem when this administration asks for such things. So in terms of the covert operations, I mean, there are covert operations that are, I guess, acceptable, and there are other ones that are unacceptable. But I think what's happened with Iran is that we haven't decided exactly how to take the diplomatic route. Or rather, we've decided not to take the diplomatic route in any effective and aggressive way. And that's what you're pointing to in terms of the weaknesses and vulnerabilities exposed by this kind of covert behavior.
Well, yes, and it seems to me that when we look at the Bush administration, that whether we're isolating Iran in this case in regard to our conversations, or we're looking at some of the things that you also cover as a lawyer related to Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo, that this whole thing with international law would seem to be coming back and biting the Bush administration, because on the one hand, I think a number of people, both left and right, have made a very effective case for the fact that the Bush administration has repeatedly violated international law and ignored international law when it comes to a number of these situations. And yet now we're asking Tehran to respect the rights of these people that they hold in detention on the basis of international law. So the contradictory character in what the administration is doing is quite clearly not only producing, in my view, a foreign policy problem, but now we're talking about these the Levinson having disappeared in Iran, this former FBI agent who disappeared on March the 8th. Now we're talking about these four Iranian Americans that are being held, including Ms. Esfandiari. Pretty difficult to effectively argue with Tehran that they need to obey the law internationally when you can make a great case for the fact that the Bush administration has been violating that same law at every turn.
Yeah, and the problem was that this was foreseeable, and we've had over 5 years to foresee it, and many people, I think starting with Colin Powell in January of 2002, pointed out that our own people, and he meant military at the time, but it, of course, could extend to others, could be treated as we were treating other people, the people that we were bringing to Guantanamo. And it hasn't happened, and it's kind of surprised people, and now it has happened. And, you know, we don't know exactly what will happen with these people. Some of them have been charged in one form or another, and they may be tried or not tried. I don't know if it'll be in a process that we recognize as a legitimate legal process. But this was foreseeable, and it sort of, the more it didn't happen, the more we could say it wouldn't happen. And yet, once they violate codes and rules and laws the way we do, we don't have much of a leg to stand on.
Yes, and it seems to me that that's precisely the case. And I don't know, I guess I go back. And, you're a lawyer, Karen, and a very fine one.
Actually, I'm a historian, and I do a great deal of work on the history of law, and particularly right now, and what's going on legally in terms of international law.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm, well, historian, I'm a historian of American politics, but go ahead.
Well, you're nonetheless considered to be far more of an expert in these matters than I. Let's just put it that way. But when I look as a casual observer at these things related to what's happened in this country since 9/11, and I find it interesting that Tom Englehart's Tom Dispatch, you know, really has done a great job, I think, of covering a lot of what's happened in the United States just since 9/11. I look at the Patriot Acts, and I look at the Military Commissions Act, which has been a subject of past conversation on this show. I look at the revelations that have come out about National Security Agency sanctioned spying on American citizens without court warrants and so forth. Is this not an indication that not only has America moved into a new and different world in regard to constitutional rights, at least according to the Bush administration, but again that this has in turn poisoned our situation in the international community, whereas they watch what we're doing domestically, that this is spilling over into the way that they perceive what we do internationally. And now, as a result of that, arguably you can say that these four people, speaking of Hala Esfandiari, Kian Taghbashish, Parnaz Azima, and Ali Shakeri, these are the Iranian-Americans in question, that they are truly being imprisoned by this strange crossfire between what one Iranian expatriate has described to me as two evil regimes, speaking of the one in Tehran on the one hand, the one in Washington on the other. Is that an overstatement?
Well, you know, you've raised a lot of really good issues, so let me just take them from the top. The first one is that Tom Englehart and the Tom Dispatch has done a remarkable job of trying to bring voices to the fore, responsible policy voices that have been submerged in the larger media. And it's been important, and right now he's running a piece on Gates, that's going to cover many days, which I think is worth paying attention to. In terms of the United States veering away from established codes of contact, presidential powers, rights of Congress, balance of powers, there's no question that we took, I don't want to say it's to the right or to the left, but we took a hard turn away from what are our established customs and our legal heritage. And the Patriot Act is probably the least disastrous of these. And the Patriot Act was above board and on the record. But the things that were going on behind the scenes, the policies that were being written while the Patriot Act was being put in place and enacted, the NSA spying, the NSA wiretaps, the use of the Department of Justice to established criteria that were political and that is going to have damage that is far-reaching and is going to be very hard to correct. Because once you discredit your major legal instruments of your country, it's very hard to rebuild the credit. And if nothing else, what the Bush administration has done is add a level of cynicism to everybody's view of, oh, yeah, are they really doing what they say they're doing? Is this really legit? And in a democracy, the most important thing that you have is public trust. And you need to have the public trust to be able to enable your institutions to exist. You know, if people decided to stopping at red lights, we would be in chaos. But everybody drives to the red lights and they stop because that's the rule. We might be in a hurry. We might want to get a place. We might have to pick up our children. Anyway.
We'll be back with Karen Greenberg, the Executive Director of the Center on Law and Security at the New York University School of Law. Mark Dankos America returns live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Check out her article for Tom Engelhardt entitled Bush Policy Detained in Iran. Stay tuned.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the task force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We are joined today by Karen Greenberg in the first hour of the show. She is the author of Bush Policy Detained in Iran for Tom Engelhardt's Tom Graham. That is a project of the Nation Institute. Karen Greenberg is the executive director of the Center on Law and Security at the New York University School of Law, the co-editor of the torture papers, The Road to Abu Ghraib, and the editor of The Torture Debate in America. She recently, among other things, took a Pentagon-guided tour of Guantanamo. We might discuss that one before the end of Karen's time on the show in this first hour to get at the bottom of some of what she has seen firsthand on that end of things as well. Karen, as I look at your article, there are all kinds of things that that come to the fore in it that would make for literally hours of conversation, it seems to me. One of the things that you discuss in this article that I think is absolutely worth mentioning again in terms of refreshing everyone's historical memory is that if we go back to January, there were five Iranian officials in Erbil, which is in Iraqi Kurdistan, who were in fact captured by the United States. So you've got a situation, five Iranian officials, they are representatives of the government of Tehran. We capture these people in Iraqi Kurdistan. We're holding them somewhere in Iraq without charges, without charges. Now, is this not an act of war under international law? And even if not technically an act of war, certainly has it not set the stage for what has happened in more recent times with what Tehran has done with these four Iranian Americans?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that you're touching upon is the United States is redefining the term war. So when you say, is it an act of war, the United States says that we may not be at war in the traditional sense with Iran, but we are at war with those people who support terrorism, who are involved in terrorism, or a state that is a terrorist state. And so we can use the term or not use it as we choose. So that could be interpreted as an act of war, and the United States could say, well, we never said we weren't at war. And so you see in which there's always a back door to what exactly the policy is and what it means. I think in the larger context, I want to just tie this to something you said earlier, which is what have been the ramifications in the world at large for United States behavior. The United States has often been accused in the past, and I'm sure not wrongly in some instances, of covert activities that are above and beyond what a state would a democratic state, the leader of the free world, would be expected to do. But this time, in the war on terror, what the United States has been willing to do is to ignore the warnings of the world and, in many ways, overtly take on a kind of policy that is aggressive and which flaunts the laws of other nations. And it has had dire effects around the world, not just in terms of the threats to our persons, but in terms of states not sharing information with us, in terms of states not thinking that we're necessarily their allies when push comes to shove. And that to me seems to be a national security risk of great proportions.
Yes, and it seems to me that in terms of this poisoned perception of us internationally, I think it's worth underscoring that the perception of the United States now is not simply largely a negative one among many of our historic adversaries in the world, but we're making a whole new set of adversaries all the time, it seems to me, with some of our policies internationally, but also those who have had a more positive orientation toward the United States over the years are also concerned about the direction that we're traveling in. So this is something that I think, again, has affected our discourse with both historic friends as well as adversaries.
You know, I think that's important, but you have to remember that the American people voted for George Bush the second time around. Prior to that, I did some extensive traveling in Europe, and there was a sense in foreign minds that there was a distinction between perhaps the United States as an entity and the Bush administration. I think that election put some doubt into people's minds about just whether or not there was a divide between what Americans would support and what the Bush administration was supporting, which means that this next election is actually very important in terms of sending a signal to the world that the effects, the post-traumatic stress disorder effects, some of which are understandable, of 9/11, have receded into a past where we can go forward without bullying people because we're proud of who we are and the principles we stand on.
Well, yes, and that'll be interesting to watch because it seems to me that all of the available polls show an increasing level of dyspepsia with Mr. Bush. Not simply in those historic constituencies that have always opposed him, but one of the things that I find to be incredibly interesting is the fact that just within the Republican Party itself, both in terms of the Quinnipiac polls and what the Washington Post has told us in recent times as far as establishment numbers are concerned, Those things, as well as what I hear when I talk to average Republicans, suggest that there's a real fissure going on when it comes to Mr. Bush's base of support that had him elected twice, and we'll discuss that when we come back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with Karen Greenberg, author of Bush Policy Detained in Iran. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Stand up and be counted. Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist Bush's impending unjust attack against Iran. George W. Bush lied to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iraq. Now he is lying to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iran. The Catholic and Protestant clergy have failed miserably to come out publicly against the upcoming unjust attack of Iran. Therefore, the lay Catholics and Protestants should demand of their respective clergies to take a righteous public stand against this upcoming Iranian unjust war. Each one of us will render to God a strict account of what each of us did to stop these diabolical tyrants, like George W. Bush, who, as roaring lions, go about the world seeking whom to murder. For additional facts concerning this upcoming Iranian unjust war, order the one-hour lecture by Father John Martinez entitled Stand Up and Be Counted. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on the web banner for more information and ordering.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
Hey America, how does it feel to be flushed down the toilet of political intrigue and treachery into the sewer of slavery and bondage, where perverts and the godless write the rules? Our unborn children are murdered, our esteemed elders are euthanized, and everyone in between is numbered and tracked like criminals so they can be farmed by government, credit, healthcare organizations, like the chicken farmer farms his chickens. Have you had enough? Is it time to declare your liberty? It's your choice, you know. The only place to begin to declare your independence is to have enough food stored so that you never have to go stand in a bread line to give away the rest of your life or sell your children for a bowl of rice and a slice of bread. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We are joined in the first hour of the show this morning by Karen Greenberg, who has authored a piece for Tom Englehart's Tom Graham, and it's entitled Bush Policy Detained in Iran. Karen Greenberg is the executive director of the Center on Law and Security at the New York University School of Law. She's the co-editor of the Torture Papers, The Road to Abu Ghraib, and the editor of The Torture Debate in America. She recently took a Pentagon-guided tour of Guantanamo. Karen, getting back to our conversation this morning, this whole thing with the present administration in Tehran, led by Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. They are, in fact, saying that they have detained these four Iranian Americans in the interest of national security. I find it amazing that they are using that term, given what Bush and Cheney have been utilizing repeatedly as it pertains to Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib and other points of intersection. As we look at what Tehran is claiming about these four people, Hale Esfandiari, Kian Tajbakhshish, Parnaz Azima, and Ali Shakeri, as we look at what Tehran is saying about them, what are you hearing from your contacts, Karen, both in this country and abroad, about these four Iranian Americans? Are they what they claim to be? Are they, in fact, people who are legitimate scholars and activists who happen to be working for Western journalistic outlets and non-governmental organizations and so forth, as they say? Or is there anything that you're hearing, Karen, from your sources which would suggest that at least one or two of them could have been involved in intelligence gathering operations either for the United States or Israel or both? What's the scoop on these people?
You know, I have no idea, and I don't know who you could get to actually answer that question. I think no matter what they were doing, what's become murky here are two things. One is the way in which the term national security was used initially by the Bush administration in this context and now by Iran to say that they can do things that violate international codes, rules of law. And second, that these people can be, you know, detained in such a way that all resembles our detaining of others under the codes of national security. And so there's two things at stake here. One is the honor of the countries involved, and two is the safety of these people. And so, you can't ask me to say, you know, who were they working for and what were they doing. But they say, and their representatives, I should say that they were there visiting family members, doing NGO, soft sector type of work. And, you know, we need to, you can have a hearing on it, you can have a trial on it, but to just take people and have them disappear and not really have them access to a legal system that's recognizable and fair is a problem. And unfortunately, it's a problem for us because the moral and the legal ground has been eroded over the past 5 years. I also wanted to turn to something that you started with before, which is about, you know, the Bush administration and how far can they go down this path of playing chicken with Iran and beating the war drums. Because one of the missing voices in this is the business community. The threat that Iran poses is a threat to the economy. I mean, this is what they say. They say that, you know, if we go to war, that the cost of oil will rise, not to mention the violent threats that they have about Hezbollah, et cetera. But it's surprising to me the absence of discernible protest on the part of the business community in trying to prevent this. It seems as if they're more willing to wait until something's happened and then protest, which seems to me to be part of the problem.
Yeah, I think absolutely, not simply in the business community, but in the American political spectrum generally. And I think this, ominously goes back, I think, to what happened in March of 2003, or the run-up to March of 2003, when we involved ourselves in this conventional military invasion of Iraq. I mean, I think of all the things that indicated prior to March of 2003 that we were heading in that direction. There was no organized, significant protest movement being launched against those activities. And then, of course, now 4 years after the fact, everyone is bemoaning the fact that we made a mistake. And yet I see a discernible pattern here with now what we are intimating that we are going to do when it comes to Tehran. And in this regard, I'm particularly concerned, Karen, about and I am going to be writing an article on this for the American Free Press, the activities of Kenneth R. Timmerman of the Washington Times and the so-called Insight on the News publication, who has been covering this Iranian human rights gathering in Paris, France, that took place last weekend, the so-called Iran Solidarity Group. Mm-hmm. Timmerman, quite clearly, is very cozy with both American neoconservatives and Israeli intelligence. And somebody reminded me of something the other day, and I went back and checked it, and it's absolutely factual. If you go back to October of 2002, Timmerman wrote an article which seemed to be the classic agitprop piece paving the way for an American war with Iraq. He made the case for Saddam Hussein having weapons of mass destruction, and reading directly from Timmerman's article here, even as we're talking, he was talking about the fact that Saddam Hussein posed a direct threat to the lives of millions of Americans as a result of the impending threat that he would utilize nuclear weapons in the world and so forth and so on. Now, of course, all of this looks very different 4 or 5 years after the fact. And it seems now that when we look at some of the similar things that are going on in regard to the Bush administration's discourse with the present government of Tehran, it all has that same ring to me, both in terms of the context in which Ahmadinejad, whatever his liabilities, seems to be especially demonized by the Bush administration. We've got overt American naval military deployments that have taken place near the Strait of Hormuz in the Persian Gulf. We have the administration ratcheting up the rhetoric when it comes to Tehran and these comparisons of Ahmadinejad to Adolf Hitler and so forth and so on. Are we not seeing a pattern that is so striking in similarity between America's posture and the posture of certain people in the American news media before March of 2003 and what's going on now? Does this not suggest that something is going to happen in regard to this country's situation with Iran that points in no good direction?
Yeah, I mean, it is worrisome. And we had sort of a period where it seemed that the issue had at least gone to a back burner, and now it seems to be on a front burner again. I would suggest that doing some investigative journalism, or just, you know, plain interviews with the military and finding out what they know and where they are and what they're poised to do would be important. But I think, you know, having said that this follows a pattern that we can recognize, a pattern of being led rhetorically into a war without necessarily knowing the facts, you know, even if we know the facts of what's going on in Iran, do we really want to go to war with them? I mean, I would pose it that way. I would also say that, you know, the word preemption has been usurped by the Bush administration as their way of handling the war on terror and countering terrorism at home and abroad. But, and this is their method of preventive action. But I would say that the American people and their representatives in Congress need to utilize their own preemptive strategies, because this is not a war you want to be reacting to. This is a war you want to make sure doesn't happen.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, most of my listeners know that I lived in Iran years ago as a young person. I was in college in the United States at the time. My father was a retired American Air Force colonel who left a post. This isn't something I necessarily emphasize on the show, but my father in the late 1960s and early 1970s was a director of logistics for the American Air Force in Vietnam in terms of the air war that Mr. Johnson and Mr. Nixon were conducting over North Vietnam. Well, after my dad left the Air Force in April of 1973, after 32 years, he took a job with Lockheed, and my dad became a director of logistics for Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi's Imperial Iranian Air Force in Tehran. And so my parents were there in the last 4 or 5 years of the Pahlavi years before the revolution. And I had an opportunity to visit Iran on numerous occasions between 1973 and 1978. Now, I mention this because I speak very little Persian. I think I know about 10 words or phrases that I picked up when I was visiting over there in the summer times in the 70s just to use taxi cabs. So I know very little Persian. I am not educationally an Iran expert. I've done a lot of informal reading on Iran over the years. I have a lot of friends who are experts in the region. And the one thing that consistently comes to my mind in regard to this whole thing is that when I look at this war that we have fought thus far with Iraq, we are in a lot of trouble. I think it's apparent to everyone who reads this that this is not a good situation for the United States. And it's worth repeating, I think, on the air, that when we look at Iran by comparison, Iran has three times the population of Iraq. Iran, in my view, is a much stronger conventional military force than Iraq has had. And then just as far as what I do know of Iranian history, going all the way back to Cyrus the Great, the ancient Achaemenid king of ancient Persia, the Iranians have a 2,500-year history of dealing with foreign incursions and foreign invaders. They're very effective at it, provably so. Their history shows it. And I think when we start talking about the disaster we're already undertaking with Iraq and Afghanistan, if we tangle with the Iranians, I've said to many of my friends in this country, we don't know what we're getting involved with in regard to these folks. They are a very tough, resourceful, cunning people. We will rue the day, in my view, that we became involved in a preemptive military action against them.
Yeah, I think you would get a lot of people in agreement with you from all points of the spectrum. Two things to point out. One is that our military has been tossed to and fro in this in the last 5 years, particularly since the war in Iraq. And what we really need to do is rethink the military going forward in terms of our best strategic defense in a situation of asymmetric warfare. Just because Iran looks like a state, it may have stateless actors who also can work on its behalf. And so getting into a war at a time when we really need to rethink an entire a sphere is dangerous, in addition to everything else you've said. The other thing I want to say is that the majority of the Iranian population is under 25. And so we're talking about going to war with a nation of youth. And there are a lot of dangers to this in terms of understanding the demographic changes that are happening in the world at large. So, I mean, from my point of view, what's happening is the world is changing very quickly, demographically, telecommunications-wise. This global world that we're talking about is changing even as we speak of it. And it seems to me somewhat old-fashioned and distracting to decide to go to war as if we can't deal with all of these complications, but what we do know is war. So there's that dimension to it as well, which worries me even more, because it seems like something to do in a situation where that's becoming increasingly confusing. And rather than think about it, we want to take action.
Yeah, exactly. And basically, you know, the whole thing of, you know, ready, fire, aim, it seems to me. The Bush administration is quite good at that methodology. And unfortunately, I think we have to include an acquiescent Congress in this, which, in my view at least, did not do its job before March of 2003 in terms of holding Mr. Bush's feet to the fire in regard to this whole thing, demanding some answers of the highest echelons of the military before we got involved in that expedition. And now here we are, in my judgment, about to make the same mistake again with ramifications that even go beyond what we've already done. We have a caller, Daniel in British Columbia, Canada. You're on the air with Mark Dankoff's America for Karen Greenberg. Go ahead, Daniel.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
I apologize for the reception, but I'm on a Skype phone and it doesn't seem that great this morning, so I'll try to be brief.
Sure, go ahead.
Yes, I've been obviously listening with fascination to your discussion with Karen, and I have a question, though, for Karen. Just to put your comments into, for me, I believe, a necessary context. I just have a simple question for you. Do you believe that 9/11 was an inside false flag act of treason? And also, when you use the term war on terror, do you put it in quotation marks or refer to it as the so-called war on terror? So I'll just take your answer off air. And yeah, great show. Keep up the good work.
Karen, go ahead.
Okay, well, no, I don't think it was that 9/11 was an outside an inside attack. I think it was an al-Qaeda attack. That's what I think, and I think it was done by international jihadi terrorists, and I think that we dropped the ball in a very significant way, and it was a preventable attack. And is this a war on terror? I don't put the war on terror in quotes, and the reason is that although it was coined and perhaps inopportunely by the Bush administration, whether or not we like it or not, because of the Bush administration's policies, we are engaged in a war on terror. I don't minimize for one second the terrorist threat that is out there, nor do I think it's some kind of undefinable ether that we can't possibly fight back against in ways that we understand that are both legal and military. And I think you have to do it in a focused, smart way and not in a, the more numbers, the safer we are, the less discretion, the safer we are, and that bullying can put itself in the place of good knowledge and smart leadership. And I think when you raise the issue, Mark, of Congress and the Bush administration, we have a different Congress now. What this country lacks entirely is good leadership. And this is what the next president's going to have to grapple with the most. Whoever is president, this person needs to know how to lead a nation. Forget about the Congress. That would be good as well. But how to lead, how to actually take a nation from living in one century and one context to living in another century and another context. And this president is going to have tremendous personal and professional wisdom to be able to do that.
Well, to be frank with you, Karen, I look at the present list of presidential contenders, and I'm talking about the so-called top-tier candidates in both of the major parties, looking at McCain, Giuliani, and Romney. On the Republican side, looking at Clinton, Obama, and John Edwards on the Democratic side, I see a lot of similarity between those six. When we come back, I want to ask you a specific question about whether or not there will be any change, regardless of who the next American president is. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned for the final minutes of our conversation with Karen Greenberg. We'll be back.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Hi, this is John Statman, and I want to tell you about a new shortwave receiver that we're really excited about. It's the Kato KA1103. And let me tell you, this radio has features and performance of receivers costing 2 to 3 times the price. Features include dual conversion phase lock loop tuner for continuous coverage of the entire shortwave band, AM, FM, and medium bands, 268 memory presets, single sideband reception with fine tuning control, signal strength, meter, battery, power indicator, DX local select, tone select, auto backlight screen, extra long telescope antenna, line out and external line in jacks, and many other features too long to list. And when you purchase a Kato KA1103, you just don't get a radio, you get an entire radio package, including an external antenna, stereo earbuds, and an AC adapter, rechargeable batteries, and a nice carry pouch. So if you've been considering buying a shortwave receiver or would like to upgrade from your present radio, the KA1103 at just $110 plus $9 shipping is an outstanding value. Call us at 800-724-2719. 800-724-2719.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're in the final minutes of our conversation with Karen Greenberg this morning. She's written a piece for Tom Englehart's Tom Graham entitled Bush Policy Detained in Iran. And Karen Greenberg, once again, is the executive director of the Center on Law and Security at the New York University School of Law, the co-editor of the Torture Papers, The Road to Abu Ghraib, the editor of the Torture Debate in America. She recently took a Pentagon-guided tour of Guantanamo. Karen, here we are in the last about the last 3 minutes of our chat before you have to run and get back to your other duties this morning. But I wanted to mention that I have sent to you and Tom Englehart a copy of an article that I wrote for the American Free Press up there in Washington, D.C. That article is entitled Giuliani and Ron Paul and Operation Ajax, or is it Operation Blowback? And, of course, I talk about the 1953 CIA and British MI6-sponsored coup in Iran against the Mossadegh regime in that country that led, I think, arguably to many of the circumstances that we presently face with Tehran. So this goes back many, many, many years in regard to American policy with Tehran. But here we are in the final minutes of our conversation. I want to ask you this. When I read the statements made by the six top-tier candidates in both of the major parties, they sound as militaristic and as interventionistic in regard to Tehran as Bush and Cheney do. Many insist that that's because they all represent corporate interests and they all have a disproportionately strong relationship with the Israeli lobby. That's my take on it. I know that it is not necessarily yours. We really haven't chatted about that this morning. But certainly the similarity between all of these candidates in the stated positions of Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney look to me to be, again, overwhelmingly significant. If one of these six top-tier people ends up being the next president, can realistically we expect any change whatsoever in regard to the course that Bush and Cheney have embarked upon?
I mean, I think that in the past we've been able to distinguish between taking a hard stand in terms of rhetoric and standing up to another country and threats and actually being a war-hungry country. And so, you know, in terms of the future candidates, there's a chance. In terms of this administration, it's very worrisome. Not only do they have a history of starting wars, of liking to start wars and of manufacturing stories through which to start these wars, but their back is up against the wall now in terms of their policies on every front. And so this is a dangerous situation. In terms of the future candidates, they should be so lucky to be in a world where this decision hasn't yet been made.
What do you think at this point is to be the likely outcome of the situation for each of these four Iranian Americans who are currently thought to be in Evin prison in Tehran?
I actually don't know, and I've talked to a lot of people about it. I mean, my hope is that we'll be able to, and I'm not sure who we are, to get them out. I think that in this particular circumstance, there's an awful lot of private negotiating, legal and otherwise, going on their behalf. And I think when this story is finally told, we really need to ask, if this is resolved, who resolved it? Was it private interest, or was our State Department willing to help, or had they been so defanged that they couldn't?
Guessing on this, Karen, and I know that I'm asking you to guess because I'm also guessing, what do you think are the percentages in regard to an American war with Iran? Do you think it's going to happen or not?
I refuse to think it's going to happen because I think that I don't even want to go there.
Yes.
And I have no idea, but I hope it doesn't happen and that the leaders in this country in all sectors understand this is not a war we need.
Karen Greenberg, I'd like to thank you today for being on Mark Dankoff's America. She is the author of Bush Policy Detained in Iran. Karen is the executive director of the Center on Law and Security at the New York University School of Law. You can find her writings at Tom Englehart's Tom Graham, which is a project of the Nation Institute. Mark Dankoff will be back live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network for the last 2 hours of the show. We're going to talk about coming guests, and we're going to do some news analysis. Stay tuned.
It's true.